You're listening to a Stranger podcast, www.thestranger.com.
Hi, this is Jen Graves. You're listening to Invisible, the Stranger's Conversation with People in Art. I'm here with Alex Schwader at The Stranger. Hi.
Hello.
Alex is in town to do, Alex, a former Stranger Genius winner, will probably be recognizable to a lot of listeners, but he's here in town right now to do a piece at Lorimore Project, which is going to close on Saturday, March 28th, and is called Stability.
Yes, the whole show runs through the end of April sometime, but this piece is a work that I will be performing, so it's a work of architecture that I'm going to be performing with another artist.
Named Ward Chilley. What happens? What is Stability?
Stability is a work of something I'm calling performance architecture. So it is exploring the performativity of buildings. It explores that aspect of a building that is an action. So when we write, say, living room on a floor plan, we assign an action to a space. And the work that I'm pursuing right now tries to take those actions that are associated with buildings and make them interpretive rather than prescriptive. So you could see it as a kind of John Cage score as opposed to a Bach score, right? Which is supposed to be, you know, you play these notes at these times. Of course, you know, every person who plays those notes is going to do it slightly differently, but in a John Cage piece, there's a whole range of interpretation possible. He sets out a loose framework. Anyway, that's the analogy to that I'm kind of working with. And this work is basically a house on a fulcrum. So it's kind of like a teeter-totter in a way. There are two living spaces in the house with a shared kitchen and bathroom, which are in the middle. And the kitchen and bathroom are behind sliding doors and visually separate me from the other occupant of the building, which is 25 feet long by 5 feet wide, and will go on an angle of probably, oh, I'd say maybe 15 to 20 degrees at maximum when it's offset at its furthest point. So it's, as I move in my living space, the repercussions of that movement are felt in the other living space by the whole building going out of plumb. And we will be living in this piece 24 hours a day for an entire week. And Ward and I met while we were in Rome together on a Rome Prize Fellowship and began working together in 2006 on a piece called Flatland, which was shown at New York Sculpture Center. And I think the last time I was here with you, Jen, during our first podcast together, I was just sort of starting preparations for that performance. And it was the first time that Ward and I worked together. And so this work grew out of some concerns that we had from that project, you know, not concerns, but really ideas, you know, hey, what if this or that kind of thing. So,
and that was a building in the sculpture center that was a foot, was it a foot deep?
It was 2 feet,
2 feet deep.
2 feet wide,
okay.
2 feet wide, 24 feet long, and then 40 feet tall. And it was six artists living for 3 weeks inside of a 2 foot wide kind of skyscraper in a way. We, as with this piece, didn't leave for 3 weeks. And
Kept a blog.
And
is it still up?
I think so. I think it's still on wardshelley.com.
Okay.
And I think he has all of the writing from that time. When we performed that work, basically the performance was us trying to go about our daily activities with this restriction of only having 2 feet wide. And so that building, as is this building, is a kind of caricature of architecture. So one condition is exaggerated in order to make an extreme experience for those who live in it. And through that extremity, one of our desires is to explore the way that the our buildings are kind of permeable with those who occupy them, you know, so that we are affected by the space that we live in, and then we also affect our spaces. So there's this kind of, it's not a fixed relationship, there's some flux involved in that relationship.
What about the ideas behind the piece in terms of how they differ from Flatland?
Well, as I mentioned, Stability kind of grew out of Flatland, and my fantasies of what Flatland would be were that you have this kind of neutral object, this building, this what wound up just kind of coincidentally looking kind of like an international style 2-foot wide structure, and then having the collateral of occupation start to make it specific or start altering it from what it's, you know, from a kind of pristine object. So people, in order to deal with this restriction, this 2-foot wideness, would start to alter the space to kind of break out of it, or, you know, make it more in line with their desires. And that didn't happen. What wound up happening was that the space was just simply too restrictive to work. There were 196 square feet for 6 people, and there was just working where you're sleeping didn't work out so well. I mean, it worked out fine, but not for, like, taking on major makings of things. So a lot of us just kind of went inward. That's kind of what happened. Not a lot was made. The building didn't change so much. Anything that was specific was done pretty much before the piece opened. So I had this kind of lingering desire to make a work of architecture that, where the occupation had a direct impact on the object, the building itself.
Throw a strike back.
Right, exactly, exactly. And then Ward and I, in discussing this, played through a number of ideas and kind of settled on this idea of two bodies feeling the impact of the other's movement or the other's occupation or shifting desires. This morning, we were at Scott Larimore's Art Clatch, and Ward, who is coming from New York, needed a blanket and a pillow. He didn't pack that. So he put it out to the audience, or to the other people at the Clatch, that he would like to have a blanket and pillow, and if anyone could provide that. And then that kind of spurred a conversation on about the work of what we might need over the course of a week. And it brought up some interesting issues regarding a proscenium and what is a viewer's relationship to the work. In Flatland, it was very discreet in the sense of it being separate. We are interested in a kind of permeability between us and those people who come in to see the work. And so what we will be doing is posting a list of those things that we need with a link to Scott Larimore's website. So people who are engaged with the project are invited to bring us stuff or to check one of those things off the list. And so that brings up a question of, well, if you bring it for one guy, do you bring it for both guys? If you just bring it for one guy, you set the piece off balance, et cetera, et cetera. That kind of, those kinds of questions come up. So that is a development that came out of that discussion, but it's also kind of part of an ongoing discussion between Ward and I when we think about these performance works. There's something kind of tricky about audience participation. You know, there's a moment where it can change away from being this kind of, I don't know, reflective experience or thought-provoking experience to just entertainment, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, where it becomes a jungle gym, or, you know, if you push this button, then the artist needs to jump. And, you know, then the piece is kind of over, in a sense. I mean, if A, then B. These more kind of gray areas where an audience can participate are interesting to us. So we're not inviting other people up onto the platform, but, you know, if they want to bring us some food there, that's a way of mm-hmm. participating, or, you know, a movie, or who knows what.
Well, that's also it's interesting to me in that one of the things I've always really liked about your work is that it feels extremely personal, almost uncomfortably personal, without it actually being about you as a as a persona, mm-hmm. right? Like there isn't some kind of personality that we're investigating.
Right.
It's more the idea that personalities are bounded, mm-hmm. and that the question of how permeable you want to be and how permeable right. you don't have a choice but to be with other people.
Right.
And you know, it reminds me about this idea that. It's an old idea that I'm just kind of in love with. That is, I'm sure, Rosalind Krauss about the way that, for example, minimalist sculpture will have you kind of constituting the sculpture itself as you're looking at it,
right.
in such a way that you're positing a public
right.
identity.
Right.
Right. You are not. There's not something that is a private identity inside of you, locked inside of you,
right.
that you then go and meet the artwork, which has an identity locked inside of it.
Right.
Right. Instead, you're sort of forced to move around, say, an ideal Judd.
Right.
You're sort of forced to move around it, and you constitute it as you move around it
right.
by bodily being near it.
Right.
And it's a public act. And then
right.
when you leave, the act is over. I
right.
mean, it's not a, where you go and you take something from the work that you consider to be sort of a... you know, a thing inside of a cube, and then you take it inside your personal cube
right.
and try to unpack it, and then sort of bring it back out
right.
in a kind of
It happens as a mixture,
yeah.
in a way. It
mm-hmm.
happens in a
mm-hmm.
moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's...
In a public moment. But it's not a public... it's not public in the sense of a collectivity.
Right.
Right?
There's, in the Judd work, I think that there's not a trace... left of your public experience
right.
or that public, you know, it happens for as long as you're there.
Yep, and then
in a way.
Yeah.
And then it's gone. So there's not a trace of your, action or mm-hmm. viewing
mm-hmm.
or constitution of the work that's left for the next viewer. So that work is open for everyone to see while it's happening, but then there's no trace when it's gone.
Yeah.
Which I think is quite interesting, and I actually had a really interesting moment with Donald Judd's work when I went to Marfa, to Chinati, and I experienced, you know, I had always known Judd's work as kind of historic, why it's historically important and why it kind of made sense to happen, but it felt very kind of intellectual for mm-hmm. me, and I wasn't able to kind of really feel moved by it. And so I went there, and like you said, it's installed in this way, in this ideal world where, you know, you approach, for example, his, I think it's 100 and some odd aluminum containers, all slightly different from one another, with that reflect you and the environment, including the other people, differently. It kind of, these little vortexes that mix up. They're kind of like, I don't know, blenders, you know, for what's happening around them, and you get to see in, and that's constantly changing as you move around the work. So it was this really interesting experience where I understood it not so much about these things, but as just the reflections that happened mm-hmm. because of them. So that became really, I became much more interested in his work, and I'll actually be back in Marfa for 3 months, starting in April. I got
really?
The Chinati residency, so I'll be the artist in residence there.
When we, you know, we're talking about Judd and what you're calling performative architecture?
Performance
architecture. It just brings up this kind of debate that I have inside going on about relational aesthetic.
I haven't read anything on, I haven't read any of the kind of definitive texts on relational aesthetic, so I'll just kind of qualify that I'm, you know, it's a term that I've heard and made my own sense of, and the sense that I've made of it is basically... it's artwork where the medium is a relationship and not an object. And to me, that's really interesting, you know, where you're focusing not, you know, there may be objects around
mm-hmm.
that are kind of, they kind of set up a relationship. They kind of set the right surroundings for something to happen. But then what actually plays out is the work of art, and it's that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So...
yeah, it seems to me not to be about immateriality, but about...
No, no, I mean, there's material there, and, you know, I mean,
right.
it's but it's at the service, it's not
right.
the end,
right.
it's to the service of another thing. And that's really interesting to me. I mean, that's that concept of relationships is, you know, is in a way the kind of how I see architecture. It's about architecture is a kind of, well, architecture is a lot of things, but one of the things that it does is it sets up relationships between people. It either discourages them or encourages them or pretends they don't exist or something like that. That, in my mind, however, is a very underexplored territory within architecture that needs a lot of work. It doesn't need anything, but I find it really interesting because I think that there's a lot more potential there than people are, than architects are giving it. I think that there's a lot that can be done. So,
and you see flatland as something that is related to relational aesthetics,
yes,
and that also engendered conflict.
Right, right. Institutional critique, I don't know that's so much what we were after.
Right.
But it was ultimately about, well, one of the levels that one can read it is about the relationships that happened within the space. I mean, it's basically you're setting up an extreme building where everyone in that building is occupying 196 square feet and having to make sense of each other within that situation. So three of the people left before the 3 weeks were up, and that was because there was kind of difficulty just existing within that space from a personal point of view, but then interpersonally as well, there were conflicts. There were conflicts just in terms of occupational habits. Some people are messy, some people are tidy. The messy people get on the nerves of the tidy people, and then the tidy people get on the nerves of the messy people when they complain about their hygiene.
And I was following the blog, and that was a little cryptic. What were the decisions that you made about making that a part of
it? Well, we were also trying to get along, right?
Right.
I mean, no one wanted to, like, directly... I mean, and it did come down to this, say, hey, look, you know, you need to take a shower every day because you really smell badly. And, you know, it's 196 square feet here. So the other thing that was interesting also was that there was not really the possibility of a group. Even in such a small square footage that was spread out over a number of
floors. You couldn't
actually meet. We couldn't meet. We couldn't have a group meeting,
yeah,
for example. There, 2 people is fine in 2 feet wide, maybe 3. One person will be seeing the back of another person's head. But try and get 6 people all together doesn't work.
Mm.
It's uncomfortable. It's it doesn't work. The space does not allow for that to happen. So that was an interesting that the architecture kind of set up this condition in that relationship between these 6 people, and
you guys were left to play it out.
Exactly,
mm-hmm.
Exactly. And the same thing will happen in stability. The same.
Have you guys given any ground rules to each other going in?
No. Ward and I have known each other for a while and probably assume a lot of ground rules. The degree to which we're correct in our assumptions will be seen over the next week. But there are no ground rules except you can't leave for a week. I mean, that's the agreement that we've made with between ourselves, between one another, and also to our audience. I mean, those people can trust that we won't be, you know, getting out and doing other things at night. We're documenting the whole thing, so there's a kind of 24-hour surveillance on or recording of the piece,
mm-hmm,
and that will serve as the documentation of the work.
There's this interesting way that, you know, it makes me think of Marina Abramović and her piece. I think it was called House on the Ocean or something like that,
mm-hmm,
where she lived in this space, you know, and that's a very different experience, this sort of aesthetic,
right,
thing where she had these knives, she couldn't get out, and, you know,
right,
she had set up this kind of stage with knives as sort of ladders, which was a signal, like, I'm not going to leave, you know, as
right,
a sort of a bond to the audience. But it reminds me of her other work, Rhythm Zero, where she had all these implements. She came to a performance space with all these implements,
right,
some of them harmless. You know, maybe a hammer would be a harmful one, and there was a gun.
Right.
And then maybe a flower and maybe a penny or something, you
right,
know, something. And the audience was welcome to do anything they wanted to with her, with those things.
Right.
And, you know, famously, the performance ended when someone put a gun to her head and someone else stopped it.
Right.
You know, this stability is a kind of a reverse of that idea, where instead of bringing the implements, you bring the needs for
right.
things.
Right.
And the audience needs to supply you.
Right.
Otherwise, you know, you're going to... What do you... You know, you're in a safe space in terms of if no one gets you the supplies, presumably you could get Scott to do it.
Right.
You know, the gallerist.
Right.
What are your feelings about kind of... Which of those decisions are going to be logistical and which are going to be related to the way the piece turns out and the relationships that you end up having with each other and the audience?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a really good question, and it's an interesting way to think of a reversal of that condition. I mean, mostly, and I would say it's not even... So you mentioned that Scott will bring us things if the audience doesn't, for example, like if we don't have those needs fulfilled by the audience. And I would say that it's not even about our needs. That component of the project is really about the audience's
desire
to participate in something,
okay. Yeah,
or not, you know? I mean, that's where it's interesting for me. It's not so much what I need, but what you need to bring me, what you want to bring me, what you desire to bring. You know, of this list, you've chosen something to bring, right? So that's where it becomes really interesting, and not so much about my needs or what happens. It's really a way of bringing people in a... Mm-hmm.
Are you tracking? Are you going to be tracking that? Are you going to be...
Yeah.
You know, there will be a blog, I assume?
What will ultimately happen is, you know, we'll have a link on Scott's website where this idea just came up a few hours ago, so we're still developing the actual form of it, but there will be some sort of list that's generated on the web as things are... As needs are generated, they're posted, as they're satisfied, there's a cross through them. So probably, I think, what we will do is, at the end, that list with crosses and still unfulfilled needs will be somehow, and that'll be part of the documentation of the experience.
There'll be the list, will there be a blog?
I don't think so, not this time.
Okay. And will you be talking to people in the gallery?
Yeah.
Okay, so people can, their windows.
Right. It's basically like a big truss. And we're not putting anything on the side of the truss.
Mm-hmm.
There will be a little lip at the base to prevent things from falling out, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But the interaction with the audience is part of the piece.
Mm-hmm.
And setting the right... And I think that this exchange thing sets the right tone for that interaction.
How transparent do you think... This is something that I'm really interested in with relational aesthetics. How transparent will the relationships be? And for instance, everybody will have their own sort of relationship with the work. Presumably, you know, you come into the gallery and you have an experience, and that's something that you do. But the primary relationships in the piece, you know, the relationships that are already embedded in the piece, for example, you with Ward, you with the structure, Ward with the structure, you know, that kind of thing. How transparent will they be? How will we kind of have a sense, and how will you have a sense, of what that relationship is like?
Or how to act, or how to...
Or what's actually going on in the relationship? You know, if you think of the relationship as being the sculpture, rather
right.
than, you know, how will we get a sense, or how will you get a sense, of what's actually happening in the relationship? You know,
between Ward and I.
Yeah.
Or between us and the audience, or...
I would say between you and Ward, since you're not going to do a blog, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Between Ward and I think that plays out kind of immediately. I mean, you're able to see this dependency
mm-hmm.
on one another.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that I was not so interested in... I mean, I was going through the experience, and I didn't... One of the reasons that a blog didn't work for me so well last time in Flatland was that I didn't want to have to, like, process the experience as it was happening. You know, I didn't want to have to put words to something that was still kind of germinating, in a sense. I didn't want to do that. So that's kind of...
Because words can shut it down.
It mm-hmm. delimits an experience. I think that there's also something about empathy that is important. I think that it's a big part of gauging a viewer is that empathy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they will... I imagine, project themselves into the piece and imagine how they would...
Or imagine their own houses moving.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Their own houses, or how would you fare if this was you in that other person's position? And again, I don't want to shut that down for someone. You know, it's always a question of how much do you give? How much do you explain to a person? And I would, yeah.
And how much is constructed?
Right.
Right? I mean, this seems to me a central tension of this question, right? Like, what needs doing as opposed to just thinking about,
right.
You know? Like, and this is sort of what I'm really curious about, is what we'll experience going to the gallery and what you'll experience being in the gallery, as opposed to what we experience sitting in this room thinking about what it'll be like going to the gallery and being in the gallery. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's such a problem because relationships are so inscribed by language, you know, and experiences are so inscribed in language, you know, that it's so difficult to know whether that's something that's true to the piece or something that would go against what you're trying to get at.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. And I'm after a kind of a moment of empathy and a moment of people projecting themselves inside. And I don't want to close that down for someone. So it's a decision not to blog, not to make a script of what happened. We'll instead, what Ward and I will do is we'll each have a camcorder.
Oh, you will? Okay.
Yeah, each on our side. And so we'll splice moments into... there are three cameras. There's one recording us all the time, just an overview, kind of sideways, of the piece tilting back and forth. And then there will be interior shots where, you know, we'll have our cameras and we'll splice moments into that overview, which will be sped up. So that's how the piece will be documented. That's how people will get a sense of what it's like to be in there. That you know, that's that little bit of information rather than a text.
Another thing I wanted to ask is, will you be measuring? Now, this is something that this is totally idiosyncratic, but I'm always thinking about there. We have Patrick and I, my partner Patrick and I, have these friends who have this joke about who's winning the marriage. You know, one person or the other is at any moment winning the marriage. And this would be very clear. I mean, this is silly, of course. But it's very clearly measurable in your case, because you could have something that if stability tips more toward your side, it would spill out. And if it tips more toward his side, it would spill out that way or something.
Right.
Are you going to be measuring any kind of tally of who's winning the work?
Winning the work. That would be like, I have an unfair advantage in that I lived here for a number of years and probably no more people than Ward does.
So you'll be tipping.
I'll be tipping because hopefully people will bring me things.
Bring you stuff.
You know, maybe I just don't have so many needs. I'm more ascetic than Ward is, so maybe that balances out. He's more of a things guy, so he'll put more requests.
More stuff.
Yeah. I can get by, you know, with like a ring of keys to play with.
Yeah.
So,
well, thanks for taking the time to do this.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I really appreciate it. And the piece will be up from March 21st to March 28th, and you'll be living there all the time. So anybody who wants to go and talk to Alex, feel free. Thanks again, and thank you for listening.